What do we really know about the man who controls one of the world's most dangerous nuclear arsenals? When basketball legend Dennis Rodman visited North Korea in 2013, he returned with a baffling message. Kim Jong-un is just a normal guy who enjoys karaoke and horseback riding. Yet this is the same leader who executed his own uncle with anti-aircraft guns, assassinated his half-brother with nerve agent in a crowded airport, and routinely threatens nuclear annihilation. These contradictions aren't just puzzling, they're dangerous. Understanding Kim Jong-un isn't an academic exercise, it's a matter of global survival. As nuclear tensions simmer and diplomacy stumbles, we're left with an urgent question. Who is Kim Jong-un, really? And more importantly, what does he want? North Korea's story begins with Kim Il-sung, a guerrilla fighter transformed by Soviet backing into the nation's founding father in 1945. What followed was industrial-scale myth-making. Every home displayed his portrait, monuments dotted the landscape, and children learned the great leader personally provided their food through supernatural benevolence. This wasn't mere propaganda. It was systematic creation of a secular religion with the Kim family as deities. The personality cult served cold purposes. Kim Il-sung implemented Songbun, a hereditary caste system classifying citizens as core, wavering, or hostile based on family revolutionary credentials. Your grandfather's wartime allegiance determined whether your grandchildren attended university or languished in coal mines. The Korean War's stalemate became propaganda gold, recast as glorious victory. When Kim Il-sung died in 1994, his son Kim Jong-il inherited godhood itself. While millions starved during the catastrophic 1995-1998 famine, young Kim Jong-un learned to ski in the Swiss Alps. Born in 1984, Jong-un grew up in palatial compounds with private beaches. For his 8th birthday, he received a child-sized general's uniform, and real generals bowed. During the arduous march, the regime's famine euphemism that killed up to a million, Kim attended elite Swiss schools under false identity, obsessing over basketball and idolizing Michael Jordan. His friend remembered him as very explosive and someone who hated to lose. This jarring contrast would fundamentally shape his leadership. When Kim Jong-il died in December 2011, experts predicted his 20-something son would fail within years. They were catastrophically wrong. Kim Jong-un demonstrated immediate swagger and brutality, systematically purging military officials. In April 2012, he delivered his first public address, the first time North Koreans had heard their leader's voice in decades. He deliberately styled himself after his revered grandfather, adopting similar clothing, haircut, and mannerisms to overcome his problematic background, a mother born in Japan, zero military experience, years in Europe. Then came the shock that announced his character. In December 2013, Kim publicly executed his uncle, Jong Song-thaek, his father's trusted advisor, for treason, reportedly using anti-aircraft guns. This wasn't quiet elimination, but spectacular brutality designed to terrorize. He methodically eliminated Jong's associates and sent relatives to prison camps. Kim has since purged over 340 senior officials, creating paranoid competition where survival means demonstrating ever greater devotion. In February 2017, he assassinated his half-brother Kim Jong-nam at Malaysia's airport with VX nerve agent, a brazen chemical weapons attack in public international space. The message transcended borders. Dissent brings death anywhere. Kim Jong-un pursues a jarring contradiction. Nuclear superpower meets luxury playground. While accelerating weapons development, he transformed Pyongyang into Pyonghattan, a gleaming capital of skyscrapers, water parks, and ski resorts. In a surreal 2012 moment, state media showed Kim riding a roller coaster with diplomats, grinning with boyish abandon. This curated prosperity rewards elite loyalty and creates the illusion of progress despite sanctions. Kim cautiously expanded markets that emerged when state food distribution collapsed during famine. By 2017, over 400 state-sanctioned markets operated, with informal commerce generating 70 to 80% of household income. A wealthy elite, donju, or masters of money, flourished between state and private enterprise. Kim embraced technology, creating a tech elite class with privileged housing. By 2017, nearly 80% of North Koreans used mobile phones. The sinister twist? These devices connect only to North Korea's closed Kwangmyeong internet, an alternate digital universe completely disconnected from the global internet. North Korea built a comprehensive surveillance ecosystem while appearing modern. Meanwhile, limited prosperity remained concentrated in Pyongyang. A 2019 UN report found nearly 11 million citizens undernourished, 140,000 children suffering acute malnutrition, 20% stunted. Kim's socialist fairyland vision ultimately relied on the same repression his predecessors wielded. While the world fixates on North Korea's nuclear program, Kim has quietly developed other terrifying capabilities. In 2014, North Korean hackers breached Sony Pictures in retaliation for The Interview, a comedy depicting Kim's assassination. They stole confidential data, destroyed systems, and threatened 9/11-style attacks. The regime's real fear wasn't the assassination plot, it was the film's potential to undermine Kim's godlike image, as North Koreans increasingly smuggle banned South Korean media across borders. Kim's cyber capabilities have grown dangerously sophisticated. The 2016 Bangladesh bank heist netted $81 million by breaching the SWIFT financial system. In 2017, North Korea unleashed the WannaCry computer worm, affecting 230,000 computers across 150 countries and causing billions in damages. By 2019, UN estimates showed Kim's hackers had generated $2 billion, a lucrative sanctions evasion strategy. The Kim Jong-nam assassination highlighted North Korea's chemical and biological weapons capabilities. Intelligence suggests the suspected biological arsenal includes anthrax, cholera, plague, and yellow fever. South Korean intelligence estimates North Korea maintains 2,500 to 5,000 metric tons of chemical weapons, including VX nerve agent, with annual production capacity up to 12,000 tons. These non-nuclear capabilities provide Kim with asymmetric warfare options and revenue generation despite international sanctions. By 2017, tensions with the United States reached terrifying heights. North Korea tested missiles capable of reaching the American mainland. President Trump threatened fire and fury like the world has never seen and mocked Kim as Little Rocket Man. Kim called Trump a mentally deranged dotard. The doomsday clock moved to 2 minutes to midnight, the closest to nuclear annihilation since 1953. Then came a stunning reversal. In his 2018 New Year's address, Kim expressed willingness to send a delegation to South Korea's Winter Olympics. The historic Trump-Kim summit followed in Singapore that June, where Trump showed Kim a movie trailer-style video casting them as heroic protagonists. The Singapore communique was vague, merely stating North Korea would work toward complete denuclearization. Trump declared victory, tweeting, "There is no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea." A second summit in Hanoi collapsed when Kim demanded comprehensive sanctions relief first. Though they met briefly at the DMZ in June 2019, diplomacy ultimately failed. North Korea resumed missile tests, and the dangerous dance continued. Kim Jong-un isn't the weak figurehead experts predicted. He's a calculating survivor who eliminated rivals, accelerated nuclear development, and wielded diplomacy to normalize North Korea's nuclear status while dividing allies. His confidence has grown dangerously since successful weapons tests. Rather than pursuing genuine peace, his actions align with North Korea's core goal, reunification on its terms, with nuclear weapons deterring U.S. intervention while enabling conventional attacks on South Korea. Understanding Kim isn't enough. We must act. The international community needs coordinated strategies, convincing Kim that nuclear weapons undermine his security. This requires prioritizing alliances, maintaining maximum pressure sanctions, institutionalizing multilateral talks, advancing human rights advocacy, and increasing information penetration to empower internal pressure. Kim's return to provocations is inevitable. His playbook mirrors his father's coercive diplomacy, calibrated threats extracting concessions. We must continuously revisit assumptions. The stakes couldn't be higher. Millions suffer under brutal repression while their leader builds water parks and threatens annihilation. We need clear-eyed realism. Kim isn't a misunderstood reformer awaiting the right incentive, but a ruthless dictator he'll sacrifice his people's well-being, regional stability, even millions of lives to maintain power. Only by seeing him clearly can we constrain his dangerous ambitions. The question isn't whether Kim will test us again, it's whether we'll finally be ready with a unified, effective response.